or the rest of the service will kind of revolve around. The reading is taken from Isaiah, and it's chapter 40, beginning at verse 21. So it's Isaiah chapter 40, verses 21 to 31. Do you not know? Have you not heard? Has it not been told you from the beginning? Have you not understood since the earth was founded? He sits enthroned above the circle of the earth, and its people are like grasshoppers. He stretches out the heavens like a canopy and spreads them out like a tent to live in. He brings princes to naught and reduces the rulers of this world to nothing. No sooner are they planted, no sooner are they sown, no sooner do they take root in the ground, than he blows on them, and they wither, and a whirlwind sweeps them away like chaff. To whom will you compare me, or who is my equal? Says the Holy One. Lift your eyes and look to the heavens. Who created all these? He who brings out the starry host one by one and calls them each by name. Because of his great power and mighty strength, not one of them is missing. Why do you say, O Jacob, and complain, O Israel? My way is hidden from the Lord. My cause is disregarded by my God. Do you not know? Have you not heard? The Lord is the everlasting God, the creator of the ends of the earth. He will not grow tired or weary, and his understanding no one can fathom. He gives strength to the weary and increases the power of the weak. Even youths grow tired and weary, and young men stumble and fall, but those who hope in the Lord will renew their strength. They will soar on wings like eagles. They will run and not grow weary. They will walk and not be faint. This is the word of the Lord. James.
Good evening, everyone. How's everyone keeping? Oh, nice. Good. It was a rhetorical question. You didn't need to answer it. No, it's good. Today we're going to do a... today we're going to do a film night. So every now and again, for people who haven't come for a while or sort of out of the loop, rather. So we do a film night every now and again. So rather than just do a normal sermon, we'll just have a film. We'll show some clips from the film, and then we'll talk about themes or kind of lessons that might have come out from the film. And I've chosen the film Hacksaw Ridge. Just a quick one. Has anyone who here has actually seen Hacksaw Ridge? Just so I've got an idea. One, two, three. Okay, so about four or five people. Those four or five people will know that it's one of those films that you can't necessarily show a lot of, because it is a war film and it is quite sort of it's quite, you know, there's lots of wounds and all that sort of thing. So we're not going to watch too much of that. But I think I've managed to edit it from what is a 15 maybe down to what would be sort of a PG, or probably not a U, but a PG anyway. So what we're going to do is, just so you get an idea of the film, we're going to show the trailer, and then we're going to show a couple of clips after that. So we'll start with the trailer, and then we'll go on to some of the clips. Cool. So that was just the trailer to the film. So hopefully that gives you a bit of an idea of kind of the general gist of it. We're now going to watch a film. So I'll summarise the trailer just in case, but just to get a general idea. So it's a guy, World War II, signs up for the military in a combat unit. He wants to be a medic. But he won't touch a rifle, and the idea is he wants to go out there and save lives, but he doesn't want to kill anyone himself. And obviously he comes into big sort of problems with his commander and his captains and his unit. And now we're going to go to a clip where basically they've put him in a military prison, and they're basically saying, we're going to court-martial you, you're not going to go out there, you're not going to fight. That's the end of it, just plead guilty. And so we're going to come into that now and watch the... Cool. So they allow him to go and serve. They allow him to go and be the combat medic. And he goes through the rest of his training. Still a lot of people in the group kind of hate him, actually. So he goes through, and he arrives in, I think it's Japan that they're fighting. And it's basically this place, Hacksaw Ridge. And you've probably got a glimpse of it from the trailer, but it's basically a cliff edge. The Japanese are on top of the cliff edge, and the Americans are trying to get from the bottom of the cliff edge to the top. And they've gone up and been chucked off. They've gone up, they've been chucked off, and it's just a continuous cycle. And they arrive, and it's obviously just, you know, it's carnage. There's hundreds of people being taken to the medic tents and all that sort of thing. And he's in a group that have to go up there and take it again. So they go up there and take it. I think they survive one night. And then, sure enough, they get chucked off. They sort of face a kind of irresistible attack. And they're all chucked. They all have to climb down and retreat. And he's just started to sort of help a few people. He's made friends with somebody who doesn't make it, and you'll see that person in the clip. And this is his moment of, like, what's going on? Like, what is my actual purpose here? You know, I thought I wanted to come and serve, but what am I doing? Like, how can I have some impact on these events now? It doesn't seem to make any sense to him. So he goes back in. Everyone else has run away. He goes back in, and the rest of the film is, like, I mean, incredibly exciting film. It's literally him going around, like, saving people who've, you know, been shot and, you know, legs and all that kind of thing, and, like, lowering them down the cliff face. And it's a true story as well. This actually did happen. He just stayed up there and just kept on getting his buddy. I think he even said he got a Japanese guy down as well. Like, just kept on saving them and getting them back to the medic tent to get them treatment. And it gets to the point where he's such an important figure that when they go back to retake the ridge, again, they have to go back. They refuse to go unless he's there praying for them and he's there with them. So it's a really cool film. We're going to watch now just the end bit. So it's a true story, and you actually see this guy a bit older talking about his memories. You kind of see as well that he's not some sort of, like, philosopher or something. He doesn't have, like, a PhD. He's actually quite a sort of simple kind of plain guy. He just had this real conviction that God had called him to serve, and that, you know, he wasn't to fire a gun, he wasn't to take life. You'll see this now. Cool. So that's kind of the end of the film. But again, if you kind of have the stomach for that kind of film, it's a great film. It's really very, really is very powerful. So I'd recommend it if you obviously take it into account. You know, there are a lot of war scenes in it. It is a very good film and worth watching. And I think as well, like, you've probably seen in that clip, there's, like, loads of really interesting themes that we could talk about. Like, a lot of interesting themes you could talk about. And I'm kind of sort of sorry to say we're probably not going to talk about many of them, just because there are so many. But I'll just name them. And I think if there is anyone else, anyone in the room that's kind of like, actually, I would like to think a bit more about that, then, you know, it is something we would like to talk about at the end with you, if it is. Or, you know, perhaps it's something that you might want to go home and think about to yourself. But, I mean, certainly, first of all, the obvious one is pacifism and what a Christian response to war could be. And Christian response to violence. There's also that point about, when does a point of conscience simply become being stubborn, or when is it simply about pride? When is it God, and when is it us? And how can that be confused? There's also how to avoid people sort of thinking that you're just sort of waving your morality around like a badge. I think the guy said, "How do you avoid that? Are there people that do that? How do we as Christians in this world, when we probably will face that accusation quite a lot, how can we avoid that?" And then I think as well, like, probably the big, well, one of the big questions is, what about our own limits, us personally? Like, I mean, you watch the film, you just can't believe how far he's willing to go. Like, you know, he's there, everyone in the unit hates him, he goes out to war, everything's going wrong, but somehow he still has the courage and he has that sort of, like, certainty of faith to actually keep going and to do those incredible feats. I think it's 75 people saved or something like that that he managed to rescue from the cliff face. When do you feel like you give in? Like, would you have given up there? I mean, for me, yeah, almost certainly. Let's be realistic. It's a real question. It's something worth considering and thinking about. And then I really like the clip where he says, I can't hear you. He's obviously praying to God. He says, I can't hear you. And then he hears somebody crying out. And then he kind of realizes, okay, well, maybe I can hear God. And maybe sometimes we do hear God in the needs of others. So those are kind of like some of the some of the interesting themes that we're not going to talk about, but again, if it's kind of like sparks something in your mind, it's like, actually, I do need to think about this, then by all means, grab me or grab somebody else. There's probably people more qualified to talk about these similar things than me in the church today. So I guess the thing that I wanted to look at was looking at the film. It's just a really, you know, especially looking back at it, just the strangeness of this situation and this topic. So you've got a guy, he's a pacifist, so he does not believe in touching a weapon, but he's convinced that he needs to serve as a combat medic. How can you understand that? How can you make sense of that? No one seems to understand it. He sort of has very hazy ideas about why that's his job and why that should be his role. What did Desmond Doss there, what did he possibly think that he could achieve in that unit? What did he possibly think he could achieve? And then he arrives when he actually gets to the war, actually having gone through the courts and gone through the court martials. He gets to this situation where he's like, actually, what can I do here? He's completely hopeless. Around him, he's got the carnage and the destruction of World War II, the deadliest conflict ever. And he's stuck in the middle of it, saying, I don't understand. I can't hear you. And I think now we'll look at Isaiah 40. So it's the passage that Owen read at the start. And actually, I think that when you look at Isaiah 40, you see that actually the people of Jerusalem found themselves in a kind of a similar situation, a situation where there was absolute carnage and destruction going on around them. And they must have asked themselves so often, I don't understand, I can't hear you. If you look at Isaiah 40, there's the context of Jerusalem has just been captured by the Babylonians, and there's people being sent to to all around the Babylonian Empire. It's kingdoms against kingdoms. Chaos and destruction seems to be the dominant theme. Yet, in the midst of this, in the midst of all this destruction and carnage, Isaiah is told to comfort the people of Jerusalem. And what does he say to comfort them? Well, there's one thing in particular I think he says. He says, his understanding no one can fathom. His understanding no one can fathom. Often we'll be in situations, we ourselves will be in situations where there will seem like there are forces beyond our control. There will seem like there are decisions that are being made above us and we have no bearing on. Just like the people of Isaiah, just like Desmond Doss. And we don't understand. We ask, what is going on? What am I doing here? Why am I in this situation? What is my purpose now? So you feel like that sometimes. Desmond Doss feels like that sometimes. And certainly, in the context that Isaiah was writing about in Jerusalem, the people of Jerusalem will have felt like that. And in this passage from Isaiah 40, you get this really wonderful, I mean, again, I haven't given you the whole Isaiah 40 because it's quite a long passage, but genuinely go back and read it, read the whole passage. It's such a beautiful passage. These words of comfort. Because although these forces at play, they might be beyond our reckoning, they might be beyond other people's reckoning, Isaiah 40 tells us clearly those forces are not beyond God's reckoning. Those forces are absolutely not beyond God's reckoning. So we read of the princes and the rulers of the world, those princes that seem so powerful, those rulers of the world so unconquerable, God will bring them to naught and God will reduce them to nothing if he so wishes. And then we go to the final sort of section of Isaiah 40, where actually God goes further. It goes further than saying God stands over it, but actually that God gets involved in it. And to those who trust in the Lord, God gives strength and he increases the power of the weak. You see, God, in his providence, he doesn't just stand above these problems. He just doesn't just stand there and say, well, I'm bigger than all of this. He actually gets involved in it. You think about Private Dawes, that's actually God getting involved in that small way, in that struggle. Isaiah 40, we're told about the increase of power to the weak, the walking and not growing faint, the soaring on wings like eagles. And actually, the crucifixion is the ultimate symbol of that. The crucifixion is the ultimate symbol, the ultimate sign, the ultimate promise that God doesn't just stand above these things. God intimately gets involved, and through his loves, he affects them, and he guides and blesses his people. He plants his footsteps in the sea and rides upon the storm, as William Copter put it. And so, as we sort of, as a church, more generally, we go into this period of change, there might be things that do seem beyond our understanding and don't quite make sense. But I think Isaiah 40 is there as a very clear reminder that God not only stands above all of it in his providence, but he also intimately gets involved through his love and through his son Jesus for us. And so we are just going to watch one more clip from the film, a very short clip, and it's actually how the film starts. So the film starts with this clip. We're not going to actually have the visual because basically, the visual is that it starts with the carnage of war. It starts with Hacksaw Ridge. They're getting thrown off the cliff. It starts with the actual, you know, the chaos of what's going on around them. And so you'll hear it, but you won't see it just because, you know, you won't see it for obvious reasons. But what it starts with is it actually starts with Desmond Doss reading that Isaiah 40 passage, which I thought was just so powerful. He was saying those words that were said by the prophet that, was it 2,600 years ago? And I was in the cinema in Richmond, and genuinely just hearing those words beamed out on a big screen, with normal people, you know, non-church people, I presume, sitting around me, genuinely sort of made me quite emotional. And I'm glad that Nico also kind of fessed up about being emotional in this film, because it is a really cool film. But we are just going to finish with this. You'll hear the words being read by Private Dawes. And then we'll draw to a close.